everybody. Welcome to another episode of Two Strike Noise, your bi-monthly baseball history podcast.
It seems like recently.
It's been a couple of weeks. We've had some stuff going on. Until they pay us to do this, we're going to have to stick with our original jobs, giving them priority. But welcome back. My name is Jeff. I'm one half of the show. Other half joining me, as usual, from the Pacific Northwest studios. It is Mark A. Johnston. Mark, welcome.
Oh my gosh, I feel like I had to dust off my microphone.
Yeah, I think we'll probably remember how to do this. It might take us half a show to get there, but we are...
We'll do better, folks. It's just been a weird couple of weeks.
This is show number 247, but Mark, we're going to pretend two things. We're going to pretend like it was last week and that this is show number 420.
And, okay.
That's going to tell you where this show is going to go.
It was supposed to come out on 420.
It really was. We have a bunch of stuff centered around that. But yeah, I mean, you know, again, if somebody will pay us what we are currently being paid to do this full time, we'll do it. But I don't think that's going to happen. So let's get right into our BP segment. We've got some non-420 things, first of all, but then we'll get into the good stuff. But Mark, let's get into our BP first here, because it's been a couple of weeks since we've done this. We don't want to pull anything. So, first of all, Mark, one of our favorites, Shiyoshi Shinjo, a.k.a. just Big Boss. That's what we call him. That's what's on the back of his jersey. Big Boss. Yes. The manager of your favorite team, the Ham Fighters. And yes, we know. If you're new, we know. We're going to call them the Ham Fighters anyway. But, Mark, I have some video for you, and I'm not sure if you've seen this or not. But it's the pregame lineup exchange. They were playing the Buffaloes. Anyway, pre-game lineup exchange must be the first game of the series, because the managers actually came out to do this. Now, Mark, I'm going to share this with you on our Two Strike Noise vision screen. I'm going to go ahead and play this. Just pay attention to his feet. Now, can you see what's going on there?
It must have been 70s night. He's got some killer bell bottoms.
Yeah, those are bell bottom. Now, I love Big Boss. I love his sense of style. He's wearing sweatbands like, you know, Dusty Baker. He's got his shades, and he had the umpires come in for a little cheer. They all did the thing. But
so awesome.
These bell bottoms are atrocious.
They are like, I mean, they're seriously Brady Bunch bell bottoms.
They are. Yeah, he could sing "It's a Time for Change" wearing that. I mean, these are like, they're like spats, but.
Sweet, man.
It's a choice. A choice was made here by Big Boss. I'm not going to say I'm too excited about it. I hope it doesn't become a thing.
It makes me want to do the hustle.
Exactly. Maybe it was 70s night. I don't know, but that is a look.
Boy. I'll tell you what, that is something to see.
That is something. So, but Big Boss, you do Big Boss. He's doing Big Boss things. Let's see. Something else that happened in the week of 420. Again, let's just pretend it's last week. The anniversary of Yankee Stadium, the original Yankee Stadium, opening up April 18th, 1923. Yankee Stadium opened up. They built it for $2.5 million. That's like half a season of what they're paying like a middle reliever these days.
Times have changed.
I mean, if you change that M to a B and make it $2.5 billion, it still wouldn't complete a stadium today.
No, that's pretty funny.
But what I found is interesting is that it was the first stadium where they used cement to build it. That type of cement they used was invented by Thomas Edison.
No kidding.
Now, it says invented by Edison. I'm assuming that is not the soccer player, the Spanish soccer
Probably
player.
Probably not.
Or Brazilian, I'm not sure. I don't want to get notes on, I don't like Edison. But I believe this is Thomas Edison invented the type of cement they used to build the original Yankee Stadium.
That's pretty cool. I did not know that.
Let's see. We had a Maddox. Actually, we've had a couple of Maddoxes happen here in the last week or two. But the first one I want to talk about, Red Sox and Guardians. The game finished in an hour and 49 minutes.
Amazing.
2-0 game. It was a complete game by Tanner Houck. I can never pronounce his name easily, but 9 innings, 3 hits, 9 strikeouts, no walks.
That's just awesome.
Yeah, it is the shortest 9-inning game in Major League Baseball since Armando Galarraga's near perfect game in 2010.
He should have been.
Yeah, should have been. But then we had almost another one. I mean, this counts as a Maddux, I think, because isn't Maddux, is it under 2 hours or is it under an hour 50?
I thought it was under 2 hours.
2 hours? All right. Well, we're going to count this one. This happened just the other day. The Marlins and Atlanta. Atlanta shut them out 5-0. Max Fried, complete game, 3-hitter, 6 strikeouts, no walks. So equally as impressive. Yes. And that was done in an hour and 54 minutes.
That's just a beautiful thing right there.
Like, if you're late for those games, you're only getting a couple innings in. But
man, I tell you what, if you were wondering if the new rules had any effect on the speed of games, I think this just having two of those in the same week kind of gives you a little bit of evidence.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we got to figure out our pitchers getting hurt because of this sped up game. Too. But I will tell you,
thing now.
As somebody that, except for when I was working a game, could care less how long a baseball game took, I actually love it. I love knowing that 2.5 hours, I'm probably going to be done with my baseball game.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's cool. And I think it's good for the game, too.
But, you know, Manfred sucks still. I hate the guy. I'd punch him in the face if he was here right now. I'm not going to lie. Let's see. Vin Scully story time. This is always great. Just finding a Vin Scully story, and we're just going to go ahead and roll it here. So this happened back in 2014. It's the Marlins at the Dodgers. The Marlins manager at that point was Mike Redmond, who I remember him as a Marlins player. He was a catcher. Mm-hmm. And I remember he completely owned Tom Glavine. I think Tom Glavine's the only person that Mike Redmond ever owned with the bat, but just completely just owned Tom Glavine. Which is odd. But here's a great story from when Mike Redmond was a player, as told by Vin Scully. So it doesn't matter what the story is really about. You just listen to Vin tell it.
You might not know very much about Mike Redmond, the manager of the Marlins. He played with the Marlins from 1998 through 04. Then he went over to the Twins, finally hung him up. And while he was playing for the Marlins back in 2003, the team was in Cincinnati. Long and losing road trip. The Marlins had just fired their manager, and after a team meeting in a rather somber and sleepy clubhouse the morning of an early game, Redmond headed for the indoor batting cages with his bat, wearing nothing but his shoes, socks, and batting gloves. That's all. And Andy Fox, a teammate and infielder, looked at him and said, "Are you serious?" And Redmond said, "Yep." And the door shut behind him, and he went in, naked like the day he was born. Cola, meanwhile, is swinging and missing. One by one, the team noticed and broke up laughing, and the entire team was hysterical until the game started. The strike two pitches swung on and missed. When the game started, the Marlins scored early and beat the Reds 6-2, and Redmond had two base hits. The next thing you know, there he was, naked, shoes, batting glove, and bat, heading for the batting cage, underground, of course. And he did it for the next 7 or 8 straight days, and the Marlins kept winning. So Redmond kept the clothes off his body and his eyes on the ball. They won 6 in a row. Then during another, when the team suddenly was cold, he did it again in Pittsburgh, and you won't believe this one. The 1-1 pitch, check swing for ball 2-1. Mike Redmond, after doing it again, the Marlins went 20-8 for the rest of the season, and they clinched the National League wild card playoff spot.
How great is that? He just weaves that story, which was probably like 3 sentences long, and he made it several batters where he keeps you informed on what's going on, but also just tells a great story.
The guy was a legend.
That guy. Yeah. I mean, there's great announcers today. Well, there's not a whole lot of great announcers today, but there's great announcers. There were great announcers before Vin. There will be great announcers after Vin, but I don't think there's ever going to be anybody as great as Vin Scully.
Well, with his storied history too, is just as impressive as his ability to call a game.
The guy ice skated with Jackie Robinson.
Exactly.
He's forgotten more stories than we have ever even written down ideas to do on this podcast. I mean, he's just, he's great.
Yeah. I did look up, just since you mentioned it, Redmond was actually 21 for 48 against Tom Glavine. Jeez. 438 lifetime batting average with a 472 on base. Not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad. Right? All right, Mark. So we've talked about minor league teams that change their team name for like a series or a day. They seem to do it a couple of times a year, each year now, right?
Yeah.
So the Madison Mallards, which I'm not sure. I think they are. I'm not sure if that's a college league or not, but whatever. The Mallards have unveiled their alternative identity for this season. And good. They are going to be called the In a Van Down by the Rivers, which just rolls off the tongue. I'm sure the announcers, whoever's calling those games, go love that.
Yeah, but now I got to buy the uniform. I got to buy the jersey.
You know, because you know exactly what that uniform looks like, right?
Oh, it's got to be Motivational Matt.
It looks exactly like the outfit that Chris Farley wore as motivational speaker Matt Foley on Saturday Night Live during this gem.
All right, how's everybody? Good, good, good. Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley. And I am a motivational speaker. Now let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old. I am divorced. And I live in a van down by the river.
He's got the checkered suit, the white shirt, and a green tie on, which is what the uniforms look like.
That's just awesome. That's so cool.
All right, so that's going to do it for our regular part of BP. But Mark, as we said, this is our 420 episode. So yes, we have some things to talk about here. Now, I talked about this one a long time ago, like probably 3 years ago, but I just wanted to bring it up one more time because we're doing a special 420 episode. It happened at Anaheim Stadium back in 1976. Before the season started, the Who played a big concert there at the Big A. 55,000 people there for the concert. You can imagine what was going on in the crowd there.
Gee, I can't.
Probably a, you know, it wasn't Jimi Hendrix, but probably a pretty thick purple haze hung over the crowd as they were listening to The Who that day. After they left, you know, they trying to clean up the stadium for the season opener, and 100 plus marijuana plants sprouted in the outfield after that.
Wow. Now,
there weren't a lot of edibles or other ways of enjoying a herb at that point. So, yeah, that would have been interesting to play a game with that happening. But
I made a little side money.
Yeah, the outfielders could have been, you know, doing some deals in between innings out there in the
absolutely make a little extra.
Yeah,
you know, probably sign another reliever.
Now, speaking of players, Mark, we do some lists sometimes. And so we have put together our all-time baseball 420 list. You've got a lot of them here. I've got probably about 10 of them.
I came up with a few.
Yeah. You want to read some of those off and let's see how many of ours match up.
Okay. Well, I went with Bud Black.
Yes. I've got Bud Black and Bud Harrelson as well.
Yes. Okay. Okay. How about Herb Score?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I didn't have Herb Score. Nice. That works both as first and last name work well.
Absolutely. So does Herb Hash.
I don't know Herb Hash, though.
Yes, Herb Hash, classic ball player, but with a great name. Ron Herbel?
Ron Herbel? No, I didn't get that one.
How about Tyler Flowers?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Yeah. No, I didn't have that one either.
Mickey Grasso?
Let's see, Mickey. Yep, I've got Mickey Grasso. And
how about Nellie Pott?
Nellie Pott.
1922, yes.
Well, that's just coming right out and saying it there.
Now we get into the ones that are a little more. Well, Josh Smoker, of course.
Oh, there's a good one. Yeah, it's more of a barbecue-related thing, I think.
Right, but now we're going to get into some ones where they're a little more special, like Mark Canha, this.
Well, you know, I will also tell you that there is a brand of edibles called Canna. I have an awful memory, if you haven't noticed. It's very easy for me to remember the name brand because I like Mark Canna a lot.
I see. Well, so there you go. And how about Smokey Joe Cunningham?
Okay, I don't know Smokey Joe Cunningham, but I'm assuming he's related to Richie in some way.
It's possible. 1920, we had a guy named John Bogart. So don't Bogart that joint.
Well, that's more of a Strange Brew episode list, right?
Well, yeah. Now, you know, Jason Dubois, if you mispronounce it, it can sound like Doobie. Dubois.
Okay. Yeah. So we're in the reach category.
Yeah, here I go with my reaches. 1905 through 1909, there was a player named Charlie Chech. And I combined him with Hank Conger for Chech and Kong. Yeah, these are some pretty good ones here, I thought. Jeremy Hazelbaker. You've got Hayes and you've got Baked. Baker.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Andy High.
Okay, I don't know
Andy. He played in the 22 through 34. There was a guy who played in the Negro Leagues for the Indianapolis Clowns, Weedy Edwards.
I've got Weedy down here. That's a great name, Weedy.
Okay, and then my biggest stretch, if you flip the words Juan Marichal, you get marijuana. That's the best I can do.
Well, you know, usually when we do these lists, we cross a lot off of each other's lists. But we didn't. I mean, you crossed maybe half of mine off. There is a current player for the Arizona Diamondbacks named Blaze Alexander.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Young Bong.
I missed that.
Yeah. We've got Home Run Baker and Dusty Baker. Those are the Bakers that I had. The team that used to be the Colorado Springs Sky Sox, when they were a AAA affiliate for the Rockies and some other teams, then they became, I don't think they're in the Pioneer League. Maybe they are the Rocky Mountain Vibes.
Oh, very nice.
Where their mascot is a Pop-Tart with a joint. Which is great. Speaking of the Rockies, of course, when they first came into the league, they played in Mile High Stadium.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes.
Yeah. And then did you say Charlie Hemphill?
I did not.
So Charlie Hemphill was actually born on 420 in 1876.
My goodness, you couldn't get more perfect.
Well, I mean, you could, but that would be Lil Stoner, who we're going to talk about in a little while.
Yes, we didn't bring up Lil Stoner because he's the centerpiece.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got some debuts today. Now, again, this show was supposed to come out on 420. So, again, just pretend that it is April 20th. In 1888, Kid Gleason made his debut, the first ever second baseman for the Detroit Tigers, who became a very team nice. In 1901. Also a two-way player for the Phillies, Browns, and Orioles as well. Let's see, 1888. Now, we talked about this guy for a whole episode. Dummy Hoy, who that'll be the last time we'll call him that. His real name is Bill Hoy, probably the most well-known deaf player to ever play baseball. He retired in 1903. At the time he retired, he held the major league record for games played in center field, career putouts, and total chances as an outfielder.
Wow.
He had great speed. He ended up with 596 stolen bases and scored 100 or more runs 9 out of the 14 years that he played.
Wow.
So I think he would have been a favorite of mine, you know, had I been around at that time. The only other deaf player that I remember in the recent past was Curtis Pride.
Yeah, I remember that.
I think he came up with the Expos and then he played with a bunch of other teams. I
believe he was an Expo, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, also making his debut, this could have been a name for the 420. 1903, pitcher, Hall of Famer Chief Bender made his debut with the Philadelphia Athletics. Part indigenous heritage, often credited with inventing the slider, though there is no really proof. Really, no proof that happened. I wonder, did he invent the sweeper as well?
Who did invent the sweeper? We got to have a show on
that. Whoever invented the slider invented the sweeper. I'm just going to say that. He was often heckled because of his heritage. He was just white enough to be allowed to play in the major leagues. Like, just there's some threshold that apparently he crossed enough. This is a great quote from him in 1910. You know, He'd get yelled at a lot because of his heritage. And this was from him. He said, quote, "You ignorant, ill-bred foreigners, I don't like the way you're doing things out there. Why don't you just pack up and go back to your own countries?" End quote. So good for him. Let's see. Also making their debuts. I mean, there's a lot of people that made their debuts. I think 420 must have been opening day way back in the early 1900s. Making their debuts in various years. Heinie Manouche, best known with the Tigers. Bobby Doerr, great, great hitter. Mm-hmm. Speaking of great hitters, 1939, Ted Williams made his debut. Obviously, we've talked about Ted a lot. 1948, Roy Campanella and Richie Ashburn both made their debuts. 1949, this is a guy that we're definitely going to just have to have an episode on at some point. Jerry Coleman made his debut.
Okay, cool.
Just, I mean, great ball player. Served in the military and just a Hall of Fame announcer. Just so, I mean, that'll be an episode of just clips being played. And then our final one in 1976, I think this guy had to have celebrated 420. We did a whole episode on him as well. Mark the Bird Fidrich made his debut today.
He was out there.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way he was not a fan. But Mark Fidrich, 1976. All right, so those are our debuts for today. As I mentioned earlier, this is show number 247. We haven't done a show fact for a while regarding the show number, but I believe you have got one for us today.
Yeah, remember Chris Davis?
I remember two Chris Davises, but as an A's fan, I remember Chris Crush Davis. Yes.
Yes, the K-H-R-A-S. Yeah, 247 had to have been one of his favorite numbers, as he hit 247 for four consecutive years.
Consistency.
The guy, I mean, he knew how to hit 247.
He can hit some home runs too, and he was a small guy.
He was a solid player, I thought.
Yeah, WAR number two, which is a very odd power number to wear number two for the A's. But I remember they don't have it anymore because, you know, it was something the fans liked. They would have Root Beer Float Day, and they would have present players and past players serving root beer floats. This was all to raise money for charity. And I remember I walked by somebody in a Chris Davis jersey who was shorter than I was, and I just thought it was somebody wearing a Chris Davis jersey. No, it was Chris Davis. He was a small guy, but man, he had some power.
I read that the A's actually sold a version of his jersey for $24.70.
So. I'd be willing to bet it was not an authentic jersey. Somebody that collects them, I can tell you that was not the case.
Gotcha.
I'm guessing it was a jersey of some sort.
That's amazing to do that for four straight seasons, and just an odd number to consistently hit.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Yeah, yeah. Very odd.
I thought that was a pretty good show note.
Yeah, it fits right in. 247. All right. There you go. Let's get to our main segment of the show. We mentioned it a little bit earlier. Today, we are going to talk about Lil Stoner. Ulysses Simpson Grant Lil Stoner from Bowie, Texas. It's a great name. Ulysses Simpson Grant. I am a distant relative of Ulysses S. Grant.
Are you?
I am. But get this, his brothers' names, Benjamin Franklin Stoner, Theodore Roosevelt Stoner, and Washington Irving Stoner.
I kind of see a theme.
I think his parents were fans of American history, is what I'm going to guess. Let's see. Little Theodore Roosevelt Stoner, though, had a hard time pronouncing Ulysses Simpson Grant Stoner's name, so he just called him Lil, even though he was younger, and that stuck throughout his at least his baseball career. Stoner was a pitcher, had great control, had a fastball that was deemed the smoke ball, which is a cool nickname, and one of the best curveballs in the league when he was pitching. The movement on Stoner's curveball is attributed to, wait for it, an injury caused by an accident with an axe. As a youth.
one of those, yes.
Yeah.
An inordinate number of players from that era.
If there's a two-strike noise bingo, that has got to be a center square, is injury forearm injury as a youth. It's got to be right in the middle there. His index finger on his throwing hand was severed and was left hanging by just a piece of flesh, is what the story says. The doctor bandaged it together. He just wrapped it back up and said, well, we're going to hope for the best. You know, he didn't wrap it really well. It did reattach itself, but it was crooked. And this was credited for allowing Stoner to throw the ball with such unusual movement. We've talked about Bob Wickman before. He was missing part of his index finger on his pitching. And I don't know if it was a farm accident in Bob's case or not, but that definitely gave him some movement because he lasted for a while. He was kicking around. Let's see. Back to the little Stoner. June 28th, 1926, Stoner gave up. Just call him Stoner. I like that. Stoner gave up a massive home run to none other than Babe Ruth. The ball went over the right center field wall and it was estimated to have traveled between 600 and 626 feet. This is in Detroit. I think that was Navin Field at that point. It was the longest home run in Ruth's career, and in 1965, it was referred to as probably the longest home run ever hit in Detroit. That's
wow.
600 to 626 feet. Now, one, I don't believe it at all.
No, I don't know if that's even possible.
I don't know if anybody today could do that with an aluminum bat.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, back in Babe Ruth's day, they weren't throwing baseballs out like they do today. You play with a baseball, it get pretty soft pretty quick, I think. I don't think it went 600 feet, but it's a good story. During one of his many ventures in the minor leagues, Lil, in 1930, on Friday the 13th, nonetheless, which was actually June the 13th, 1930, Lil hurled a no-hitter. He faced 27 batters and missed a perfect game by issuing just one walk. But that base runner was quickly erased as he was thrown out stealing. So, good day nonetheless, though. Lil Stoner was a big fan of chewed male pouch tobacco. That's what it was called. Chewed male pouch. Which, if I'm just looking for chewing tobacco by name alone, that's probably not going to be high on my list.
Probably not.
Chewed mail pouch. My gosh, that sounds very appetizing. Let's see. Stoner was considered a jinx by a lot of his teammates. It seems that anybody that roomed with him was often released, traded, or sent to the minors quickly after sharing space with Stoner. Let's see. This is a great quote about Stoner's jinx and Babe Ruth. It says, quote, "Were Babe Ruth a roommate of Stoner, he would contrive some way to break his neck. The jinx is more certain than death taxes, and the only way to stop it is to shoot Stoner or lose him in the desert."
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of
harsh.
That's pretty extreme to get rid of that jinx. Stoner was also known for his skill in baking. Nice. And was sometimes known during his playing career as the Bowie Baker Boy. Which that's an awful nickname, but I mean, Lil Stoner is much better. Can you just imagine the merchandise today if Lil Stoner, man. I mean, and he would have to play for the Rockies or somewhere here in like the Bay Area or Seattle to really.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have to be a baseball fan to buy Lil Stoner stuff.
Yeah, I mean, every little kid in high school with that little wispy mustache would have, you know, a Lil Stoner jersey. Also known for breeding award-winning irises and was an accredited judge of the American Iris Society.
Wow. So he was a grower.
He was. Let's see. His proudest botanical achievement, he said, was creating a pink iris hybrid. So, you know, good for him.
You know what? That just sounds like the name of a pre-roll. Pink iris hybrid.
Well, I mean, Lil Stoner should be the name of a pre-roll.
Oh, man, the endorsement deals the man would have. Oh
yeah, man. But you know what? Look at these off the field stuff that he did. He was an accomplished baker and an accomplished What's the word when you...
Horticulturist?
Horticulturist, yeah. We've talked about Mookie Betts before with his bowling prowess and the Atlanta pitchers, the big three, how great golfers they were. John Smoltz trying to qualify for the PGA. I just learned that Xander Bogaerts has a YouTube channel where all he does is talk about, you know, pet fish. And wow. Setting up these intricate tanks and saltwater fish and all that kind of stuff. That's a big passion of his. So I love it when you get to learn about guys off the field and the things they do like that.
Yeah,
that,
you just never know. They're regular folks in some ways.
Yeah. Or they just talk about, as I learned at fantasy camp from guys from our favorite era, they just talk about hunting, fishing, and farming.
Yes.
Which I know so much about all of those things.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Stoner was also a big fan of opera, and he amassed a large collection of opera records.
Wow.
I don't know. You know, it never mentions anything about 420, but he sure seems like he might have been a pothead.
Yeah. He was a sophisticant, if nothing else.
He was different. I mean, I like this guy. He found what he liked to do, and he would do it, and he didn't care.
No doubt.
So good for him. All right. So that's going to do it, though, for Lil Stoner. Again, not a whole lot of information, but just an interesting guy. A great name. I think, can he be a patron saint of this show?
I think he has to be.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff, by the way, I just looked up Bob Wickman just to see. And believe it or not, he did lose part of his index finger in a farming accident as a child.
When was he born?
It was born in 69. So it was a farming accident apparently in the 70s.
That's incredible. Here I thought I was pretty safe in saying that, you know, nobody's getting hurt in farming accidents as a youth anymore. And then Bob Wickman's got to go prove me wrong.
Wickman's only 55. So.
Well, that's great, I guess. Well, I guess it's not great. But
he had a good career. There's nothing wrong with it.
All right, Bob Wickman's he wants to be a patron saint too, but he's got a long ways to go. He's got to come on the show. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right, so that's going to do it for the main segment of the show. Mark, it's time that we head on into the last part of the show, the segment that we still like to call it, and so we still will. It is time for Wax Pack Heroes. We're ready to start a new season, right? We've had a couple of exhibition games with this new format, which has been a lot of fun. We're going to go ahead and get right into the opening day for us right here, because we haven't been around for the last couple of days. We're going to finish up a couple of packs that we've opened and didn't get through. So you are going to get to choose between the 1988 Fleer or the 1990 Donruss. Which one would you like to finish up?
I'm a big fan of the 88 Fleer. That's a red, white, and blue.
It is. Yeah. All right. So you've got that. I've got the Donruss. I can tell you already, because of that choice, I'm going to go up 1-0 already. But before we do that, let's go ahead and run through the rules here, because this is a new season. We might have, you know, new fans. It's opening day. A lot of people just go out for opening day. They might not be big Wax Packs Hero fans, but let's let them know. We're going to open these. We're going to look up the Baseball Reference War of the Year of the card. So that'll be either 88 or 90. We're going to take the Baseball Reference of that. Then we're going to add those together. Whoever has the highest one for that round wins that round. First one to 5 wins. A couple of things that can add or subtract some of those points. Baseball aesthetics. We're calling them 80s baseball aesthetics. That means real stirrups, glasses, mustaches, eye black mustaches, Brady Anderson sideburns, mustaches, anything like that. If you didn't get that, we're big on mustaches. Extra 10th of a point for each of those. If we find something like 2-1s that we don't like, that is going to be a minus a 10th of a point. If the person on the card won an award that year, that means Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, MVP, All-Star, or Gold Glove, they're going to get a half a point each for those. If there's a Hall of Famer on the card, whether they are in focus or not, that's a whole plus one for that. If Ricky Henderson or Nolan Ryan shows up in either pack, I think we're going to go with, If Ricky shows up in either pack, I win that round. If Nolan shows up in either pack, you win that round because they were that dominant.
Fair enough.
If they happen to come up against each other, then we'll go to the war. But I don't think that's going to happen.
That's a miracle. We'd have to do a million shows and it would happen.
Yeah. But, you know, who knows? We'll go buy a lottery ticket if that happens. That's what we'll do. Pop culture references. That is a half a point each if they're easy to find, unless it is a Seinfeld, Simpsons, or Sabrina the Teenage Witch, in which case it's a whole point because those are kind of the holy grails. And if they are mentioned in the Mitchell Report or were suspended during their playing days for some illegal activities or things we don't like, that is also a minus a half a point. All right, Mark, I can tell you because these packs are already opened, the top card on both of these, I am going to win this round. I'm going to assume pretty easily, but let's take a look anyway. Your card is for the Montreal Expos. It's Mike Fitzgerald.
Mike Fitzgerald, not the sociologist.
Certainly what first came up in my mind. No, came up with the Mets, 10 years in the big leagues, 7 with the Expos, 2 with the Mets, 1 with the Angels. Let's see, 1988 with Montreal, 63 games. He was the backup catcher there. 271 average, 347 on base, 5 home runs, 23 RBI, and that will equal a WAR of 0.3.
Okay, well, I'll tell you something about Mr. Fitzgerald. He did hit a home run his debut at bat.
Oh, that's very nice.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, that first year, he had 2 hits, one of which was that home run. He walked 3 times. That's not too bad.
No, nothing wrong with that.
Oh, wow. Traded by the Mets with Hubie Brooks, Herm Winningham, and Floyd Yeomans to the Expos for Gary Carter.
Wow.
He was part of the deal there. That's a big deal. Big deal for the, you know, obviously the 86 Mets team is where that came along. And nothing else, really. All right, so you've got a 0.3. Nothing else on this card is going to help you out at all. I'm going to win this one because I have got, with the Cincinnati Reds, it's Eric Davis.
Oh, yeah. Heard of him.
Oh, Eric Davis. Let's see. And in 1990 with the Reds, he hit 260, a 347 on base, 24 home runs, 86 RBI, 21 stolen bases. So a 2020 season there. Let's see, got MVP votes, and overall, that is going to be a WAR of 4.4. He has got, well, I'm going to minus some points here, because he's wearing high tops with stirrups showing. Ooh. So that's an automatic minus.
Not my favorite look.
He does have a mustache, though, so that would cancel that out, but at 4.4, I don't think it's not going to matter.
Yeah, one thing that's just awesome about Davis is that he actually beat colon cancer in the middle of his career.
That's right. Yeah. I remember that.
Just amazing.
Also managed on his own with a bruised or ruptured kidney or something after game 3 of the World Series, and Marge Schott, being the classy broad she was, just left him in Oakland to fend for himself. Became the first player in Major League history to hit 3 grand slams in 1 month, and the first to achieve at least 30 home runs and 50 stolen bases in a single season.
Wow.
I mean, just if he could have stayed healthy, this guy would have already been in the Hall of Fame.
No question about it. One of the absolute best players of his era.
First World Series at bat, he homered off of Dave Stewart, 1990.
Wow.
Then suffered a lacerated kidney.
To say he was not tough would be the biggest lie in baseball.
Oh, boy, yeah. Let's see. The childhood icon of comedian Ron Sexton, who I am not sure who that is. I originally thought it was going to say Richie Sexton. That's why I read it. Apparently, the Bob and Tom show, he was very popular there. They like to talk about him. Yeah, I don't. This is all. It says in pop culture, and it's all about Ron Sexton, who I do not know who that is, and I might get roasted for that. But regardless, I am up 1-0. Your next card is a catcher with Cleveland. It's not Sal Bando. It's Chris Bando.
Bando, yes.
I remember him because of baseball cards. I don't remember. Oh, he's the brother of Sal Bando. There you go. Let's see. 9 years in the big leagues, 8 with Cleveland, and split time with Detroit and Oakland. Let's see, in 1988, he split time with Cleveland and Detroit in 88. Only appeared in 33 games, a 125 average, 217 on base, 1 home run, 8 RBI, and a WAR of minus 0.4.
That's a good score right there. Very happy with that.
I'm gonna give you a 80s baseball aesthetic on this card because he's got a batting helmet with no flaps on. I mean, he's in his catching position, but he's got a batting helmet with no flaps on, and I like that. So
definitely.
That'll bump you down to a minus 0.3.
Yes.
I hope that doesn't come back to bite me, but I think it's okay.
You don't like this. Bando made a single appearance with the Oakland A's, and it was the final game of his major league career.
I wonder if that was to kind of honor his brother.
You never know with brothers.
Yeah. All right. I have got outfielder here for the Padres, Gerald Clark. That's Gerald with a J.
Yes.
Let's see. The brother of Phil Clark. Wow. So we've got two brothers in this round. Yeah. Gerald, 7 years in the big leagues, Padres for 5, Minnesota and Colorado for 1 each. 1990 with the Padres, 53 games, .267 average, .299 on base, 5 home runs, 11 RBI, and that is good for a WAR of 0.1. He's got a mustache, so that'll be 0.2. Hopefully we don't find anything bad out about him.
The only thing I see here is that in 92, when he was with the Padres, he noticed when Lasorda and Socha went out to the pitcher's mound, he noticed they never called timeout, so he took off and stole home.
Now, how could a manager be on the pitcher's mound and time have not been called?
I have no idea.
I would have played this game under protest if I was Tommy Lasorda, because that doesn't seem right.
That's pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, but again, you know what? I don't think it's that embarrassing because I think that's BS. I don't think if Tommy Lasorda comes out of the dugout and crosses the line, there's got to be time. You can't have a manager in the field of play during a and have. Now, I'm all fired up about this.
That's a good point because that's 10 players, even if one of them's a chubby old man.
Let's see. A member of the inaugural Colorado Rockies that played at Mile High
Stadium. Oh, there you go.
All right, so that round is going to go to me as well. I'm up 2-0. I like it. Oh, Noyce. This is a Noyce card. It's Paul Noyce for the Chicago Cubs. I don't think it's going to be Noyce for you, but...
No, it's not so Noyce.
Let's see. Paul Noyce played 2 years in the big leagues. Bad news for you is those years were 87 and 90. So you got no stats there. Played for the Cubs and the, he was on the Reds in 90. So he played one game, had one plate appearance, went 1-for-1 and got a World Series ring.
Well, shoot. If you're going to play one game.
That's Noyce.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this. I did not know this. I played college baseball at Washington State University.
Hey, look at that.
Oh, Paul Noyce is now my guy. I like him.
No doubt. Especially since he scored 0 for me.
Yeah, there's nothing on. Now he's holding the bat. This is a posed shot. It's at old Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. I can see that in the background. He's got no batting gloves on, but this is just, he doesn't have a helmet on. He's just, you know, pulled him out of the dugout during BP to take this picture. So I can't give you any points there.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so that 0 is going to go up against one of my favorite players of all time. Here he is with the Padres. It's Mike Palerulo.
Pags.
I still cannot spell his name to save my life. Let's see, Pags, 11 years in the big leagues, 6 with the Yankees, 3 with the Twins, 2 with the Dads, 1 with the Rangers, 1 with the Orioles. 1990 with the Padres, 128 games, hit .254, .322 on base, 7 home runs, 38 RBI, and 91 OPS plus, and that is good for a WAR of 0.4. The good news here for me beyond that, well, he does have 2-1s on. I can see that. So that'll be 0.3. But he has eye black, he's got a mustache, and he's wearing his hat under his helmet at bat.
Ooh.
Which is sweet. Definitely one of the 80s aesthetics that we like. So that'll be a 0.6. So assuming that Pags was not in the Mitchell report, I feel pretty safe.
No, I think you're fine. I'm going to have to mount quite a comeback here.
Oh, he played with the Cebu Lions during 94, during the strike season. He was like, I'm just going to go play elsewhere. You guys sort it out. I'm going to go play elsewhere. All right. Yeah. So that's, I'm going to take that as well. It's 3-0. I like the way this is headed.
I'm not a fan. It's not so nice.
All right. Well, here you have got a player that went on to be a general manager, not a very good one. He's still the general manager of the White Sox. I don't know. It's outfielder for the White Sox, Kenny Williams. Let's see. Kenny Williams, 14 years. Well, no, this is it's. Kenny Williams did not debut in 1915. How about this one that debuted in 1986? I think that's the guy. Let's see. 6 years in the big leagues, 3 with the White Sox, 2 with the Tigers, 2 with the Jays, 1 with the Expos. In 1988 with Chicago, 73 games, hit 159, a 221 on base, 8 home runs, 28 RBI, and a 46 OPS plus, and that is a WAR of minus 0.9. Good news for you. He's got real stirrups on.
Oh, good.
I can't tell if he's got a mustache or not. It's really hard. This is a cool shot, though. It's at Fenway. He has finished his swing. He's got the bat is wrapped around his body, but it stops after his hands. It's a broken bat, which is interesting. I've seen this card before, but just noticed that. So that's cool, but not going to help you a whole lot. Those stirrups will bump you down to minus 0.7.
Do you remember? I think he's the guy that there's a blooper of him rounding third and smacking into the third base coach and knocking him out.
Really? I think I remember, it says here, 1990, when a series of wild throwing errors resulted in him rounding third base and mauling third base coach John McLaren, knocking him out in the process.
That's it. Yep. That's what I remember him from.
Yeah, there he is. And then, he became the GM of the White Sox, where I know he's just made some awful. I know Billy Bean has fleeced him a couple of times. But there's a list of some of his trades here, which are not great.
He was fired in August of 23.
How did he last that long?
Well, he did win a World Series.
In 2005.
I know, but it lasts a while, you know?
All right. So you're at minus 0.8 there, and you're going to come up against, for me, I have got a catcher here with the Red Sox, Rick Cerrone.
Oh, sure.
I remember Rick was the catcher for the Yankees when Ricky was on the Yankees for a good deal. Let's see, Cerrone, 18 years in the big leagues. One of those guys, played for a ton of teams. He's a good guy for Immaculate Grid. Spent most of his time in New York, 7 years there. 1990, let's see, this was his third time back with the Yankees. Appeared in 49 games, 302 average, 324 on base, 2 home runs, 11 RBI, and 99 OPS plus. And that is good for a WAR of positive 0.9. And he's got a mustache, so that'll be an even one.
You're going to get a pop culture point here.
Oh, well, that's good. I also want to mention he pitched twice in 1987. Oh, wow. 2 innings pitched, no hits given up, no runs, no earned runs, walked one, struck out one.
Not bad.
That's pretty good.
In 81, he recorded a song that was released as a single.
Yep. We've talked about it, right?
A long home run.
Yeah. We've played it. We had feedback because people knew that and we played it. Yeah.
It failed the chart though. You believe that?
Yeah. That's really hard to believe because back then, I mean, there's no social media. You're not coming across this on some social media message board, right? You got to get it actually played on stations.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll take it. Rick Cerrone puts me up 4-0.
I'm in a bit of trouble.
You're in a lot of trouble. Let's see what you can get here with shortstop for the Dodgers, Dave Anderson.
Oh, boy.
Let's see. Dave Anderson, 10 years in the big leagues, 8 with the Dodgers, 2 with the Giants. In 1988, 116 games, played all over the infield, hit 249, 325 on base, 2 home runs, 20 RBI, 4 stolen bases, and 88 OPS plus, and a WAR of 1.3. Very nice. I think that's from playing basically everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know here. On the card, he has got his helmet on, his batting gloves. He's in the dugout. Looks like he's getting ready to, I would say, go to bat, but there's somebody in the background in blue jeans, which leads me to believe that this might be during batting practice. But he's got his uniform on, but maybe it's spring training. I don't know, but he's got his batting gloves on, but he also has some in his back pocket. Is that an 80s baseball aesthetic?
I think people still do that.
I know people.
I'd like to, but you know.
I know guys put that sliding glove in the back pocket, but I don't see a lot of guys with their actual, I guess, base running gloves in the back pocket anymore. But okay, but you'll get a, let's see, what did I say? 1.3 out of this, which is by far your highest total so far. First round draft pick in 1981 by the Dodgers. And let's see if there's any pop culture references. I don't think so. Was on the 88 team. Why do we pull so many guys from teams that beat the A's in the World Series? I don't understand.
I don't know. It's only happened a couple of times.
Well, recently, yeah. But we seem to pull a lot of them. All right. That's good for you. A 1.3 to see if you can stave off defeat. I have got another catcher here with the Astros, Alex Trevino, brother of Bobby Trevino, who played for 1 year in 1968.
Hmm.
Wow, and he's the brother, but Alex debuted in 1978, but went on 13 years in the big leagues, 5 with the Mets, 4 with the Reds, Houston, Dodgers, Giants, and Atlanta as well. In 1990, he split time between Houston and the Mets. Overall, hit .221, .293 on base, 1 home run, 13 RBI, 69, nice, OPS plus, but overall, that is a minus .4. I don't think I'm gonna win this one. I don't think there's enough pop culture about Alex Trevino.
Yeah, well, you never know.
No, I do know. I'm pretty positive.
He's actually the Spanish radio broadcaster for the Astros.
Yeah, he's called more than 3,000 Astro games.
Wow, that is a number.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So you're on the board, 4-1. Nice. All right.
Yes.
You are going to get third baseman for the Brewers. It is Ernest, don't call me Ernie Riles.
Ernest Riles, sure. He played for a number of teams too.
Yeah, I know he played for the A's and the Giants as well. One of those rare guys that played for both teams. I think there was a controversy about his name too. I think his name was spelled wrong on some of his baseball cards. He's also been referred to as Ernest and Ernie in several different cards as well. Overall, 9 years in the big leagues, 4 with the Brewers, 3 with the Giants, and then 1 apiece for Houston, Boston, and Oakland. 1988, he split time between the Brewers and the Giants. Overall, hit .277, .310 on base, 4 home runs, 37 RBI, a 97 OPS plus, and that is good for a WAR of 2.0.
Wow.
And he's got a mustache, so that'll be a 2.1.
Did not see that coming.
Very nice. Traded by the Brewers to the Giants for Jeffrey Leonard, that SOB. Cost me a game in last season. Yeah. Also traded for Darren Lewis, when the Giants and the A's made a rare trade across the bridge. All right. So that's another good score for you right there. That's going to be tough to beat. I don't know if I'm going to do it here. 1990, I don't know how good a year pitcher for the A's Mike Moore had. But, I mean, they had a great team, so.
True.
Let's see. Mike Moore, overall, 14 years in the big leagues, 7 with your Seattle Mariners, 4 with my Oakland A's, and 3 with nobody's Detroit Tigers. I'm sure somebody will get upset about that. 1990, 1 year off his one All-Star year. Let's see. He went 13-15 with a 4.65 ERA. 199 innings, 204 hits, 73 strikeouts, a 79 ERA plus, and all of that is good for a WAR of minus 1.5. Yikes.
Ouch. Wow.
That's a lot of minus WAR right there. First round draft pick for the Seattle Mariners in 1981.
I believe he was the first overall pick.
Oh, you're going to make me go back and look at that, aren't you? Yeah, first overall pick by the Mariners, 1981.
Yeah, he was a Mariner for a good while.
Of course, won a World Series. With the A's, 1989. But that's about it. Yep. Shoot, I was trying to close this out, trying to, you know, rest the arms in the bullpen, but now it's 4-2.
Yes, a comeback has begun. It's brewing. It's just brewing, though.
All right, well, this is going to be an interesting matchup here. For you, you've got a Cougar, but it's a BYU Cougar. It is outfielder for Cleveland, Corey Snyder.
Big Corey Snyder fan here.
Yeah, well, you know he's got a mustache. It's hard to see because it's blonde, but you know he's got a mustache. He's got eye black, and he's got real stirrups on. So you're gonna score right there from those things. Overall, 9 years in the big leagues, five with Cleveland, two with the Dodgers, the Giants, Toronto, and the White Sox for parts of seasons. In 1988 with Cleveland, 142 games, .272 average, .326 on base, 26 home runs, 75 RBI, a 122 OPS plus, and that is good for a 2.7 plus the things I've mentioned will take you up to 3 right away. That is pretty darn impressive there. First round draft pick, 4th overall in 1984 for Cleveland. Was traded for Jeter, Sean Ooh, wow. Jeter.
Yeah, wow. Now, here's an interesting. I'm not sure I'm going to get pop culture points for this or not, but his daughter, Amberly, was the subject of a biopic. She was paralyzed actually in a car accident and subject of the biopic Walk, Ride, Rodeo, a Netflix film. And Corey was portrayed by Bailey Chase.
I'm going to say if they were portrayed by somebody, that I'm going to give it to you.
That's kind of where I was leaning.
Yeah. He was also a member of the San Diego Surf Dogs coaching staff.
Oh, nice.
Ricky Henderson was on that team. Of course, Corey on the 84 Olympic team. A lot of...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that card.
Guys, we've talked about there. He's got a lot of stuff, but he had a lot of stuff happen to him during his career. Yeah. All right. Well, you've got... enjoys golf, has a 2 handicap. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I forgot what your score was. Oh, it's 3.5 with that pop culture reference. And this is going to be an interesting one. I've got a rated rookie card here. Pitcher for Atlanta. It's Steve Avery.
Ooh, I collected a lot of Steve Avery cards.
I think a lot of us did. Yeah. I mean, I remember my freshman year of college is when he was coming out, and there's a couple of guys on my floor. We collected baseball cards pretty hardcore, and he was somebody we were after. Good news for you, though. His first year in the big leagues was 1990, and it was not good. 1991 was the year I really need. 1990, he went 3-11 with a 5.64 ERA. That's Ooh. Really all I need to tell you there. WAR of minus 1.5.
Ouch.
So I think we... Well, I mean, there's going to be pop culture references. I don't think there's going to be enough. First round draft pick, 3rd overall for Atlanta in 1988. And yeah, there's nothing's going to help me enough there. But we've talked about Steve quite a bit, but you're going to win that round. And it is now 4-3.
Now, all you've done is produce hope in me, which may just be dashed here. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I need to win this round because, again, I can see what's coming up, and I need to win this round. That's all I'm going to tell you. If you win this round, you're going to win the whole thing.
Okay, let's go then. Let's do this.
So for you, you've got third baseman for the Reds. It is Buddy Bell, who might be 406 at this time.
So true.
Or I don't know. He might be 26. He had white hair. He's kind of like Whitey Herzog. No.
Okay.
I don't think Marge Schott allowed them.
Oh, yeah.
But he does have real stirrups on. So that'll help you out regardless here. Let's see. In 1988, he was 36 years old, but he looks 102. Split time between Cincinnati and Houston. Overall, 95 games. So he hit .241, .295 on base, 7 home runs, 40 RBI, and 86 OPS plus. And overall, that will be good for a .2 WAR.
Oof.
That'll be 0.3 because of the stirrups. So you've got that going for you. I don't know if there's going to be pop culture or not in Buddy's future.
I don't think so, but I will mention that he is one of only 5 families to have 3 generations of major league players.
Yeah, the Bells, obviously.
Gus Bell's son and father of Mike and David.
And we get the Boones, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just reading here. It looks like the Sisslers. Dick, George, and Bob.
Okay.
Also went on to manage. That's right. I forgot that he managed. He managed the Tigers, the Rockies, and the Royals. Not well, but I don't think he had a lot to work with.
Right.
But so that you're going to have a .3, and you are, I am very interested how this is going to end up here. You are going up against Mariner catcher, and it's not Dave Valley. It's Scott Bradley. Was Scott Bradley a good defensive catcher? Because I'm going to need that, I think, here.
I believe he was pretty good, yeah.
Let's see. Scott Bradley, 9 years in the big leagues, 7 with Seattle, then the Yankees, the Reds, and White Sox. In 1990, with Seattle, 101 games, 223 average, 264 on base, 1 home run, 28 RBI, a 51 OPS plus. Oh, no. A WAR of minus 1.
Uh-oh.
He's got eye black on, but that's not going to matter. I know he's the head coach of Princeton right now, but I don't think there's going to be any pop culture reference that's going to help me there. I've already told you what's going to happen if we go another round. That's heartbreaking. I was up 4-0, and I got cocky.
The very first real season game could end up being the greatest comeback.
Yeah. Well, you can't get a bigger comeback, I'll say that. Well, unless we tied. But right. You have got a crunch time card with 2 players on it, of which you're not going to lose, regardless of who you pick here, from 1988. You've got Daryl Strawberry or Eric Davis.
Wow, I'm going to go with Eric the Red.
Okay, because Straw's got the Mims bands on here in the picture. So.
Oh, yes.
And Eric Davis actually doesn't have a mustache in this picture.
What?
I don't think it matters. Let's see. Eric Davis, we already know what he did in 1990. In 1988, with the Reds, 135 games, 273 average, 363 on base, 26 home runs, 93 RBI, 35 stolen bases, a 139 OPS plus, and a gold glove.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, that will equal a 4.4. The gold glove will be 4.9. No mustache, so it will just be and Red's hot. We can't forget Red's hot, so that'll be a 5.4. We don't even need to look for anything else. I have got pitcher with Cleveland, Scott Bales. I don't think Scott Bales is going to bail me out here.
Yeah, I think your team bails on you.
Yeah, 9 years in the big leagues, Cleveland, California, Texas, 1990, 2-0 in 27 games out of the pen, but with 6.37 ERA. 46 hits in 35 innings.
Ouch.
And a 60 ERA plus, and that will equal a WAR of minus 0.9. Jeez.
Wow.
I didn't just lose. I got just shellacked here.
Thus completing the comeback of the year.
On opening day. Yeah. Wow. The fans are
hopefully
already,
that sets the tone for the season.
Fans are already disgruntled.
Over here, we're gruntled. We're very gruntled.
All right. So congratulations to you. Oh, geez. I can't believe that. That was not cool. Anyway, that's going to do it for the first Wax Pack Hero of the season here. Also going to do it for this 420 special episode. Let's see. It's 420 somewhere. So we're going to go enjoy that. But thank you again for listening, for joining us. Hey, we've got some big news that you can entertain yourself with coming up in the next week or so.
This is true.
Hopefully everybody will be excited about. Yes. I'm going to make you come back and listen to figure out what it is some more. But if you want more of us, you can find us on all the social medias. We are at Two Strike Noise. That is at TWO Strike Noise. You can also find all of our links in the show notes. And Mark, we also have in the show notes an email address.
Yes, you can write us at Two Strike Noise, spell it out, TWO Strike Noise @gmail.com.
All right. That'll do it for this episode. We will see you again on the next episode of Two Strike Noise.
Thank you. God bless you. Have a great day.